Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
$3.99 for all you can eat. Well, I'ma stuff my face to a funky beat. We're gonna walk inside. Hit this what's up. Put the food on my plate. Add some coke in my cup. Give me some chicken flakes to find.
Rap gets a physical. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, a look at the complicated relationship between hip-hop and health. And a live performance from jazz vocalist Sashal Vasandhani. But to begin, this 1985 song, All You Can Eat, by the Fat Boys, gives the impression that these guys would rather miss a beat than miss a meal. But other hip-hop artists, like A Tribe Called Quest or Talib Kweli, have used rap to promote healthier lifestyles. Today, we'll get a house call from a Columbia University neurologist and from Public Enemy frontman Chuck D. Together, they are using hip-hop to promote positive eating habits. But before we do that, let's review hip-hop's medical history. Joining me now in the studio is documentary filmmaker Byron Hurt, who's working on an upcoming film called Soul Food Junkies. Byron, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And joining us on the phone is Mark Anthony Neal. He's a professor of black popular culture at Duke University. Mark, to you as well. Welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, how you doing, John? Good to be on again.
Byron, Notorious B.I.G., Big Pun, Fat Joe, Fat Boys, this list goes on for a while. Has fat somehow been cool in the world of hip-hop?
Well, I think that some rappers who are larger than life, both in hip-hop
well-stated.
And in real life, have used it as a way to sort of brand themselves, to market themselves, to endear themselves to audiences in hip-hop. So it hasn't been good, it hasn't been healthy, but it's been a part of hip-hop. Someone asked the question, is being fat in hip-hop cool? And my first response to that is, well, if it is cool, it shouldn't be, because as an African-American community and communities of color, we're suffering from increasing rates of obesity and other nutritional-related diseases. And, that sort of thing should be taken seriously and not be sort of made fun of.
So, Mark, this seems like it has been something that's been in hip-hop for a long time. How and why would this have begun?
I mean, there's a couple of things, and there's some counters to it also. Guys were using any kind of gimmick they could find in order to sell themselves. I mean, that was the Fat Boys. I mean, that was part of their gimmick, right, with three fat guys.
Right.
When you think about Heavy D, right, Notorious B.I.G., I mean, you're just going on and on how, guys, Fat Joe, how guys use different kinds of names to play off the fact that they may have been, a little overweight or significantly overweight in some cases. But, at the same time, we could go back 21 years ago, and KRS-One is talking about, the chemical byproducts in beef.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gone hand in hand. You've always had, 5% rappers, mm-hmm. and other rappers who followed Islam who talked about, no swine, no mm-hmm. pork. So it's gone both ways, right? Both just kind of trend towards more healthy eating, and at the same time, cats just kind of using, their size as a way to market themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, it's interesting, you've both mentioned Fat Joe, Byron has recently showed off a leaner, trimmer physique, right?
And
he's lost almost 90 pounds.
Well, it's so funny because, and just, just ironically, I've been interviewed so many times for my film, Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, and I'm making this new film about soul food, but this is the first time I'm talking about hip hop and food together mm-hmm. in the same conversation. But Fat Joe recently sort of revealed that he's lost a tremendous amount of weight and made some changes in his lifestyle, his dietary lifestyle, his nutrition, in order to live healthy and to be and to sort of move toward wellness, and also encourage the hip-hop community and communities of color to pay more attention to what we eat and get more exercise, which I think is a powerful statement coming from somebody with the reputation of Fat Joe.
Well, here is Fat Joe, the Bronx native, speaking about his recent weight loss.
The craziest thing is the biggest killer of people is food. It kills more people than AIDS or gun violence or war or anything you can name. Everybody keep catching strokes and heart attacks, and what happened to me was, like, 7 of my friends passed last year from heart attacks, and they were all 32, 34 years old, 35, and I said, I got kids. I can't leave them like that. This world is too hard for me to leave my kids without me supervising them and being there for them.
That is Bronx native Fat Joe, the rapper who has recently lost 88 pounds.
88
well
pounds.
Done.
Well done.
And do you see this, Byron, as a reflection of a message finally getting through to the community?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I think that the culture at large is becoming more aware of eating healthy and the importance of eating healthy and staying fit and living longer. And I think also artists like Fat Joe are getting older and maturing and starting to think about their own mortality in different ways. Fat Joe is a really good and interesting case to talk about because not only was he personally fat and overweight, but he also had a very close peer and contemporary in Big Pun, mm-hmm. who also right. died from a massive heart attack some years ago. So I think it's a combination of his own personal experiences and just the culture that's sort of shifting and moving to a culture of wellness that I think influenced Fat Joe's some of Fat Joe's decisions.
Now, Mark, you mentioned KRS-One, the Five Percenters, people who follow that especially that brand of Islam, where there has been that message of no swine, no pork, vegetarianism, veganism, all these things have begun to creep into rap. Does that begin with the so-called conscious rap of the late 80s, early 90s?
I think that's one of the places where you could put it. Guys who are talking about strengthening their mind and their body and talking about eating better. I mean, a bunch of these guys, you mentioned the Five Percenters and also an influence of Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of cats who were reading Elijah Muhammad's Eat to Live. Mm-hmm. Buying copies of it on 125th Street and things like that. So it's often been a part of the culture. But also you see now, as the world has become more of a foodie culture and if hip-hop is representative of the world, it's not surprising that you would have hip-hop artists also interested in that kind of dynamic, not just in terms of healthy eating, but also gourmet eating and things like that.
All right. Now, this is something I want to pick up on in just a moment. But it's a theme that has been around for a while, and our producer Joel Meyer in the control room has a comment that sort of goes to that. Joel?
John, our listener Antonio from Mexico City says he can't stop thinking about the A Tribe Called Quest track Ham and Eggs from their fantastic debut album. Antonio writes, "The most memorable line to me is about the effects of cholesterol in Ham and Eggs, a great track."
I don't eat no ham and eggs, but the high cholesterol.
What's in mama's basket?
Some veggie links.
And some fish that stinks.
Why, just the other day, I went to grandma's house.
Smelled like she conjured up a mouse.
Eggs was frying.
Ham was smelling.
In 10 minutes, she started yelling.
Come and get it!
And the gettings look good. I said I shouldn't eat it. She said, I think you should.
But I can't.
That's Tribe Called Quest from their 1990 debut album, and Ham and Eggs, and all that cholesterol in rhyme, in rhythm. From the same year, KRS-One and Boogie Down Productions did a song called Beef.
Beef, what a relief. When will this poisonous product cease? This is another public service announcement. You can believe it or you can doubt it. Let us begin now with the cow. The way it gets to your plate and how. The cow doesn't grow fast enough for man. So through his greed, he makes a faster plan. He has drugs to make the cow grow quicker. Through the stress, the cow gets sicker. 21 different drugs are pumped into the cow in one big lump. So just before it dies, it cries in the slaughterhouse full of germs and flies. Off with the head. They pack it, drain it, and cart it. And there it is in your local supermarket. Red and bloody, a corpse neatly packed. And you wonder about heart attacks? Come on now, man, let's be for real. You all what you eat is the way I feel. But the Food and Drug Administration...
That is KRS-One and Beef from 1990. And we are talking about hip-hop and health with documentary filmmaker Byron Hurt, whose new documentary will be called Soul Food Junkies. He's also the man behind Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes. He's with me here in the studio. Mark Anthony Neal's on the line with us, professor of Black popular culture at Duke University. And Mark, you were talking just before the music about, you know, foodie culture and how hip-hop has become a part of the wider culture. So, of course, there is now this confluence of people thinking seriously about food and liking hip-hop. Here are two tracks that we just played that are over 20 years old.
Right.
Were these just voices in the wilderness? Were they too far ahead of their time? Why didn't this message take hold 20 years ago?
I think when you're talking about hip-hop's core audience 20 years ago, you know, they're facing some of the very same issues that working class and poor communities are facing across the country. Trying to find ways to find inexpensive, food. You know, we know black communities, poor black communities have all kinds of supermarkets and fast food restaurants in the neighborhoods. You know, you got to go 20 miles the other side of town to find a Whole Foods and try to find organic foods. So I don't think it's that the message didn't hit, but these are folks who are just kind of struggling along and trying to get people to think about how can you eat healthier, you know, based on the lived conditions that you're in. I think also for hip-hop artists in particular, you know, this is a particularly striking thing, and Byron mentioned this with regard to Fat Joe and his relationship with Big Pun. You know, a lot of these guys are getting older, and what they realize, of course, is that, you know, they don't have health insurance plans.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they've been living fast for the last, you know, 10 years. They're in their mid-30s now, and they find out they have high blood pressure, and, you know, they're dealing with, you know, all kinds of other ailments that they hadn't thought about before, and suddenly they don't have health insurance to be able to take care of it. So I think this thing takes on much more of a significance, you know, for some of these artists as they've gotten older and have to deal with kind of the realities of life.
And Byron, it's not just the artists who've gotten older, it's the artists who didn't have a chance to get older. You know, mentioned Big Pun, certainly not the only one, not the only rapper to have, you know, suffered for the way he carried on his lifestyle.
That's right. I mean, there's Big Buff from the Fat Boys who died of a heart attack. I think it was in 1995, I believe. Not just obesity, but, you know, Fife from a Tribe Called Quest has been very...
Diabetic.
Been very public about his battle with diabetes, as can be seen in the new documentary film about A Tribe Called Quest. I think it's a combination of real lived experiences and just this growing awareness about how to live better so you can feel better, so that you can walk around and not be sick.
Now, what about, you know, Mark makes an interesting point that, you know, for a lot of people in the community, you go outside, there isn't a Whole Foods, but there's a Mickey D's.
Absolutely. Well, that's what my film partially seeks to address. And
right.
That is...
Rather, Popeyes.
Popeyes,
well,
yeah.
Popeyes, yeah, and all kinds of other, you know, Kennedy Fried Chicken and all other fried chicken joints. The overabundance of fast food and how inexpensive it is and how accessible it is, as opposed to a Whole Foods or places that do have healthier food options. And so those are realities that exist and have existed for a very long time in our communities. And there's an emerging food justice movement that is growing, that is burgeoning, that is trying to address it and counteract it and educate the community on how to eat better and to find better options and to, you know, produce more food options for themselves.
Well, I was struck about 4 or 5 years ago, underground rapper named Mr. Liff put out a track called The Fries, in which he takes a really kind of sarcastic look at exactly what you're talking about, the easy access to bad food.
Quarter pounder with cheese, order with ease, super size please. Can you believe people ain't even survived through the drive-thru, and they thought they were live too, pulling off, pumping raw base, stuffing fries in their face, over a billion served, what they never deserved, so they drove away, they swerved into the curb, with their head on the steering wheel, kids blacked out in the back, with the fucking Happy Meal, what a crappy deal, but it was only $4.99, so there's more people in line, yeah, the plan's running fine, the parking lot is now a better
crappy meal, but it was only $4.99, I mean... Byron, this sort of goes to what you and Mark were just talking about. It's easy, it's cheap.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So this is a theme running through your forthcoming documentary.
Yeah, you know, one thing, as I listen to many of the songs that we're talking about, you know, from Big Daddy Kane to Eric B. and Rakim, where food is talked about or mentioned, to Craig Mack, you know, Flavigneur, who mentions, you know, food in his song, Goody Mob Soul Food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's both a love and an affection and sort of, you know, a discussion about food and soul food in a loving way, as an endearing culinary tradition that we should, you know, love and embrace and enjoy. And then you have artists like Nas, who creates fried chicken,
right,
that is just completely, you know, trashes soul food and the health consequences that come along with eating soul food.
But now the thing with soul food is not fast food. It's the opposite. It is slow food. It's supposed to be cooked slow. And, yeah, some of it can be greasy and there's probably a lot of cholesterol. But, you know, just the process of it is so much more natural. Do you split hairs?
Oh, absolutely.
Like that?
Well, I mean, we talk about some of the health consequences and the health benefits of soul food in the film, but this is something that Goody Mob talked about in their song Soul Food, where they compare fast food and the accessibility of fast food to the healthier option of soul food and the kind of dishes that they grew up on, that their mothers and grandmothers prepared for them. So there are healthy options available with soul food as well as unhealthy options.
This is the song that that Byron's talking about by Goody Mob, called Soul Food.
Fast food got me full of sick. Them crackers think they stick by trying to make this bull affordable. I thank the Lord that my voice was recordable.
Hey, soul food. Well, hold on, see, it's what I write. And Miss Lady acting like we in jail. Says she ain't got no extra hush puppies to sell. Bankhead seafood making me hit the dough with a mind full of attitude. It was a line that the beautiful JJ's Rib Shack was packed too. Looking to be one
the song
of the
Soul Food, 1995, tune from Goody Mob. And we've been talking about hip-hop and health. Byron Hurt's forthcoming documentary will be called Soul Food Junkies. Byron was last on Soundcheck for his documentary Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, which looked at homophobia, the gay community.
Masculinity in hip hop, hypermasculinity, violence, misogyny, sexism, and homophobia in hip hop.
So, you know, there are lots of kind of sociological ways of approaching this music that we call hip hop. And Mark Anthony Neal, professor of black popular culture at Duke University, also with us on the line, looking at this from a sociological point of view, you know, is there any kind of analogy to be drawn between hip-hop's relationship to health, to food, as, you know, some of the other issues that Byron had covered earlier in his earlier documentary?
I think absolutely. I mean, one of the continuing conversations within black communities about particularly health issues in black men is a refusal of black men to go to the doctor. And so that when you see someone like a Heavy D lose 100 pounds as he did 15 years ago, or to see someone like Fat Joe talk about dealing with strokes and heart attacks and things like that, and encouraging people not only to lose weight but to go get themselves checked out. I mean, that stuff is critically important around issues of masculinity.
Mm-hmm. And Byron, when do we think we'll get a chance to see Soul Food Junkies?
Well, that's a good question. I hope to be done with the film this fall. I don't know when it'll air, but I'd like to, you know, enter it into some film festivals, hopefully Sundance, which is in January, but, you know, that's to be determined. But we're working hard on it, and I think it's going to be a groundbreaking documentary, and it's going to have an impact on the community.
Soul Food Junkies will be the name of it, from the documentarian Byron Hurt, who's been with me here in the Soundcheck studio. We've also been speaking with Mark Anthony Neal, professor of black popular culture at Duke University. Byron, Mark, to the two of you, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Be healthy is the message from the band Dead Prez.
Bars, no cigarettes, only ganja, fresh squeezed juice from oranges, exercising daily to stay healthy, and I rarely drink water out the tap because it's filthy.
In a moment, we get a visit from the hip-hop doc and hear how he's using rap to teach health and diet to young people, and we'll also talk with one of his colleagues, Public Enemy frontman Chuck D. And later, Sashil Vasandhani hasn't always been a jazz singer. We'll hear how this former investment banker took a risk on music, and the returns were pretty sweet. Live performance coming up later on Soundcheck.
I'm in Tulip. I'm in Tulip. I'm in Tulip. One in Tulip was the cause of it all.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Hip-hop has had a yo-yo diet over the years, as we've just discussed. Attitudes have ranged from the Fat Boys' junk food happy raps to KRS-One's beef with beef. However, a new public health project aims to use rap as a vehicle for youth health awareness. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Olajide Williams, a.k.a. the Hip Hop Doc. He's the founder of the Hip Hop Health Initiative, And he also happens to be Chief of Staff of Neurology at Columbia University Hospital. Olajide Williams, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, welcome. Thanks for having me.
And joining us on the line is none other than Chuck D, Public Enemy frontman. Chuck D, welcome.
How you doing, John? How you doing, Dr. Williams?
Hey, hi, Chuck. How you doing?
Now, you guys are working together on this. Is it difficult to get the message out, you know, into the community when it's a message about eating and choosing healthy food and stuff like that?
Extremely difficult. You know, it's very interesting that you begin with that question, because that is the question that confronts a lot of public health efforts throughout this country. You know, really the failure of public health to truly penetrate the fabric of our most needy societies, where there are epidemics of obesity, heart disease, and stroke, you'll find that the failure of our efforts to really penetrate these societies is linked to our inability to effectively communicate messages and weave these important health behavior change messages into the fabric of their culture.
Well, Chuck, there's a lot of talk in the news these days about Marshall McLuhan, you know, the medium is the message. What makes hip-hop a medium that can actually get this message into a community where it hasn't penetrated that well before?
Well, I think culture is a universal language. I just got here back from Santiago, Chile, and about 12 other countries where hip-hop has been used as a vehicle to get a lot of points across where the mass media, mainstream, doesn't get across as well. And in the United States, I think it's been co-opted by situations that kind of look at it as just being a profit initiative as opposed to something that can be a well-rounded, well-balanced way of getting across a lot of aspects of life, especially the more positive aspects of life. And as far as this program headed up by Dr. Williams, you know, to be something to go out there and counter the advertising of fast everything. Mm-hmm. I call it the evil empire of everything. This is a great counter effort to be able to approach people with the alternative to look at themselves in a positive manner as opposed to being sold just anything. And so hip-hop is the thing that comes across, not just what you hear on the radio, not just what you see on TV, but something that's a part of everybody's organic life of communication. And in this instance, Hip-Hop Heals is a perfect example of reaching a demographic that's being barraged by, I would say, just like they say, bad news is news. And
right.
When it comes down to our community, the bad news is all the news. So therefore, it wouldn't be, you know, ridiculous to think that bad food is also the news that also gets overblown into our community. So we got to counter that, and that's what this project does.
Well, it's funny, Soundcheck listeners, if you go to our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck, there's a video there. McDonald's promoting its chicken nuggets with basically wrapping nuggets. You know, it's like it's using the musical language of hip hop to, you know, it's very clearly aimed at a community, as we were talking about before with the filmmaker Byron Hurt, that, you know, doesn't have access to a Whole Foods or, you know, or even a Trader Joe's. You know, what they have is Mickey D's on the corner.
Or knowledge of it. You know?
Right, exactly. So, Chuck D, do rappers have a responsibility to kind of counteract the sort of perceived notion of, you know, hip-hop as a way to effectively market stuff that maybe isn't so good for you?
You mean musicians?
Yeah.
They're all the same. It's, you know, people, you know, are musicians. Whether they're rappers or singers or bass players or beatboxers, I mean, they're all musicians, and music is an aspect of culture, and whenever you can actually use your music to actually transcend it by putting something that's good for the people as opposed to, you know, being told to try to, you know, exhaust their pockets by buying a product is a good look and a responsibility and an obligation since we come out of the people.
Well, one of our listeners, Becky, left this comment: responsibility equals entertainers is an oxymoron. So, I mean, maybe I'm not sure whether she means it never happens or it doesn't need to happen, but, you know,
well,
Dr.
You
Williams?
Know, you know, one of the important things here, when I was really looking at developing a program that would be effective in these communities. You know, I just finished reading one of Malcolm Gladwell's book, and one of the things that he said really stuck out in my mind. He said that stickiness is the property of the message, but contagiousness is the property of the messenger. So one of the most important things that we needed to do in public health is not only to find more sticky messages, but also find more contagious messengers. And hip-hop can do an incredible job in being not only contagious, but in helping to create sticky messages.
Well, let's listen to something that we're probably hoping is both sticky and contagious from the Hip-Hop Health Volume 1, featuring Chuck D and Easy AD from the Cold Crush Brothers. This is Go Slow, Whoa Foods.
With a messed up tummy, snack food, chips and cookies and soda. It might taste good, but it ain't good for you. Full of sugar and fats and all that butter and cream, if you know what I mean. Don't fry it, try it. Skip that junk food diet. All that butter is bad and you can't deny it. You might go wild every once in a while, but whoa, don't make it your style.
Bring it back now.
That is called Go Slow, Whoa. Hip-Hop Health Volume 1 is part of the Hip-Hop Health Initiative founded by my guest, Dr. Olajide Williams, and featuring my other guest, Chuck D, Public Enemy frontman, and here performing with Easy AD from the Cold Crush Brothers. And Chuck, let me just, there's no easy way to ask this question, so I'm just going to come out and say, to a lot of kids, this is not cool. You know, you're talking about cholesterol and eating healthy and stuff. How do you make that message sticky, as Olajide was talking about a moment ago, and contagious as well?
Well, number one, I like to commend Dr. Williams for being a giant of a man, a giant of a human being, to recognize that, you know, there's an audience out there, a demographic of people who are, you know, are in a school system or whatever system they might be, that there's a way to reach them. It's not about making a song to compete with 50 Cent, what they hear on free radio down the dial, where they're hearing all kinds of adult topics. This is something like if you're sitting in a classroom or you're sitting in an area, you're 10, 8, 9 years old, this is something that your teachers or the academic body can actually accent what they're teaching to actually help. Use the medium of music and the culture and the message to convey something across to that audience that's sitting right there. And I would tell you this, is that if a young person 8, 9, and 10 years old, and if they're the judge of something cool or street cred that I hear on these CNNs or whatever, then now they're just starting to talk about, oh, they got street cred. This is something that's not even on a young person's mind. Mm-hmm. They're sponges. So give the sponge the necessary nutrients.
And Chuck makes an important. Chuck makes an important point. I actually disagree with you when you said that this is not cool. I think that it depends on.
Believe me, I'm not saying it's not cool. I think
it depends on the age of the kids, and that's the key. You see, there's a whole thing in public health research called audience segmentation, and audience segmentation is basically when you basically tailor your messages to a specific audience, and that could be a specific race, ethnic group, a specific age category. In this particular situation, we decided that the target age range for our initiatives is really between the ages of about 8 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And within this particular age group, you know, I have kids within that age group, and we enroll about 12,000 children from New York City every year.
So is this through the public schools?
This is through the New York City public schools. And they have an incredible experience with the music, with the animation, with our cartoons. And we also perform research studies to really show the efficacy of our efforts. So I think depending on the target age, this might not be cool to older adolescents, but to the pre-adolescent kids whose minds are very fertile and ripe for this type of information, it is kind of cool to them.
So what does your research show? Are you seeing results?
Absolutely. So we've looked at a couple of things, you know, to really assess the stickiness of the message. We do basically pre- and post-testing. We do long-term retention testing. And we divide our survey instruments into both knowledge and behavioral skills testing. And then we look at formal behavior change, specifically looking at food purchasing behavior.
And how long has the program been?
So our hip hop health programs date back to 2005.
Okay.
But our hip hop heals program is just 2 years old. We were actually working very specifically around stroke before we moved into the obesity space. But so we're about 2 years out. We have a number of data really showing that not only can we, one, have these children return certain knowledge that we're passing on to them, but most significantly, this is really what really excited me the most, is actually looking at its effect on changing behaviors. So we put together a very simple quasi-experimental research design to assess food purchasing behavior in our children. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that these children, as a direct result of our intervention, when you compare that to a control population, what we found was that our intervention, which is not just audio listening to music, it involves didactics and it also involves a lot of animation and video gaming. Our intervention can actually influence food purchasing behavior amongst these children.
Well, and then I guess what the next step will be is, can it then carry through to the parents who are making the bigger decisions on the food that comes into the
Absolutely.
House? That'll be
That's part of our research, too.
That is part of the job, and it is part of the Hip Hop Health Initiative that Dr. Olajide Williams has started and which Chuck D is a part of. The Public Enemy frontman's been with us on the line. Dr. Williams has been here in the studio. The album called Hip Hop Health Volume 1, you can find a link to it on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Dr. Williams, Chuck D, thank you guys both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Dr. Williams.
Thanks, Chuck.
Let's make a change by pushing hip hop health. It's embedded in our soul. Now let everybody know.
Still to come, jazz vocalist Sashil Vasandani pays tribute to the likes of George Gershwin and John Hendricks on his new record, and he joins us for a live performance next.
Okay, this is how you want to do it. Put some education in music. No problem. I got it. I'm going to give you...